listening to the New Mamas Podcast. Hello, new mamas. I'm here with Jackie Milani. She is also a new mama. I'm so excited to have her on today to talk about newborn life. She's actively right now in the newborn stage and breech birth, advocating for yourself throughout pregnancy in the fourth trimester. And then maybe we'll talk a little bit about fitness and health because she is a fit mama and always my inspiration. Funny enough, we actually met when we both did CrossFit in Massachusetts about 8 years ago, which is like shocking because it feels like just yesterday I was working out with her. Actually, funny, Jackie, you probably don't know this. I was so intimidated by you and Chantel.
Oh, no. Yes,
because I was like, I don't know. I felt like you girls were so fit and so cool. And this is going to shock you. So Gabby, my sister, would come with me to CrossFit, right? In the beginning, yeah. I would get in the car and I'd be like, Jackie said hi to me today. Like, I was like such a nerd.
No, I totally get it. But Chantel and I had the benefit of joining like right when they opened. So we never got to be like intimidated. We were like the first ones. Yeah. So we got to kind of ease into CrossFit. But I totally get how intimidating it is. But we just lucked out and got like really comfortable really fast. I totally get it.
Yeah. And I think also like I was what, like 24, 25? I don't know. At that age, I was also like more insecure, not confident, like not brave enough to like go up to people and say like, hi, I'm Lena.
Let's be friends. It's like a second college, basically.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like I wish like I had more like confidence to just go up and be like, hey, I think you're cool. Let's be friends. But I was like way too shy, which is so funny.
I feel like you did. You did not come off like that. You are always such a delight and I love taking class with you.
Thank you. Okay. So now fast forward 8 years. We both have babies and you just gave birth to Natalie.
I did. 10 weeks ago. Yeah.
Okay. I want to hear about your birth story. But first, let's start with how is newborn life?
It's good. I think I have a happy baby. I feel really lucky. She's like super smiley and we don't necessarily have a routine yet, but we're kind of in a groove of like, I typically know what she wants and can give it to her. I'm getting a decent amount of sleep. I mean, I wake up in the middle of the night to feed her, but then we both like can go back to sleep. So that's really nice. And it's the best. I like so appreciate the time off that I have right now. It's amazing. I don't want it to end. Yeah, it's going really well.
And how many weeks is she?
10. Or she'll be 11 on Friday.
That's like that weird stage where it's like, oh, wait, you're kind of like an infant now.
Yeah.
Like starting to become an infant.
Yeah. And they tell you like, you know, everything's out the window the first couple weeks, survival mode. And now is the time where like, if you read up on stuff, it's like, oh, I'm supposed to start doing stuff to make this easier for all of us.
How is feeding gone? Like, are you bottle feeding, breastfeeding, combo feeding?
So I'm nursing. I am like pumping once a day just to kind of build up a supply. And we have introduced a bottle. I want to be able to leave her. I have left her a couple times. The longest time I did was this past weekend. I went skiing. But she took like one bottle in 8 hours and slept the rest of the time. So
that's actually kind of amazing.
It's great, but I'm like, are you starving? It kind of like messed up her routine a little bit. But yeah, so I'm almost exclusively breastfeeding and then introducing like one bottle a day just to make sure she can take one. And so eventually I can get back to work, but it's going well.
That's awesome. And you also moved into your new house, right?
Really? Yeah. Big renovation. And like the timing was amazing. We like moved in and then had the baby.
Thank goodness. And what was that like, that transition of like being pregnant and your house was under construction? Like, were you living somewhere else? Were you living in the same place? Like, what was that like?
No, we lived through construction. We did like 6 months with my parents to just get the house livable and then moved into the first floor. And then while we renovated the second floor, and it was a 3-year project. So, I mean, I was used to construction. My dad's a builder. Like I was used to that part.
So it was like every day. Wow. 3 years. It's, you have to have the world of patience. I feel like when you're going through that.
Yeah, a lot of decision fatigue, but we are here, so.
You're here, you made it, house renoed baby. So
Yes.
cute. And you also have a little French bulldog.
We do.
Kona.
You might be able to hear her. She's like snoring in the background. I call her like our really expensive sound machine because she's always like sleeping next to the baby and making white noise with her nose. So I think it's working.
That's actually so good.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually because they say, right, for newborns, it's like important to have like a fan or some sort of noise happening, like not just totally silent. So thank you, Kona, for being.
Yeah, thanks, Kona.
Thank you. My little Boston Terrier, Daisy, I sent her on vacation for a very long time with my parents down in Florida.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I just felt bad because she's getting older and the winters up here are really tough. And she's become my little elderly snowbird, but I miss my sound machine. Definitely.
Totally.
She was the same thing. Like you could hear her snoring from like the whole other side of the house.
Yeah. But it's white noise. Like it's never bothered any of us.
No.
Just used to it.
Yeah. You mentioned Natalie's birth a little bit on your Instagram.
Yes.
But I'm here to learn all of the nitty gritty details.
I'm here to share it.
All right. Where do you want to start?
So Natalie's birth story really begins when I was 36 weeks pregnant, I'd say, because that is when I learned that she was in a breech position. So breech just means that the baby is not in the optimal head down position leading up to birth, but rather they're facing the opposite way. So their bum or their feet are down by your pelvis and their head is up by your ribs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different types of breeches. Natalie was what they call a Frank breech, which meant she was folded up with her bum like sitting in my pelvis and her head and feet were up by my ribs. So she was a pike position. We discover she's breech at my 36-week appointment, and my doctor tells me that I will likely need to schedule a C-section for 39 weeks pregnant.
Oh, so it was just like that. It was
just like that.
Your daughter is breached. You'll likely have to schedule a C-section. And how did you feel about that?
Yeah, so just to give a little background, up until this point, I was having a wonderful pregnancy. Like, I never got sick. I was able to continue eating and working out with modifications, obviously, the way I like to. I was feeling really good. And I was also preparing and hoping to have an unmedicated or a natural birth. So I was reading up on different methods to get through an unmedicated birth. I was educating myself on how to increase my chances of having an unmedicated birth. I wanted all the health benefits that came with a natural birth. I wanted to recover quickly. I wanted to feel how to push. I wanted to experience oxytocin. Like, I wanted to experience birth. I feel like as a pregnant woman, like, you always prepare yourself for the possibility of having a C-section. There's always a chance that you might need one. And in the event that you do, it is a wonderful option that's available to us. But sitting in that 36-week appointment, I was not prepared for my doctor to propose that quite yet. So I responded and I just asked, okay, well, could I attempt to have a vaginal birth with a breech baby? Like, I knew it happens, but I didn't know much about it at that point. And her body language turned really cold. And she just said, I can tell you that none of the providers in this practice would support that. So I asked. Yeah. Yeah. So it was off the table with this doctor. And I asked her, like, are there providers in other practices that would support that? And she told me that many hospitals have tried to implement vaginal breech birth programs and have had to shut down due to incidences.
And what does incidences mean?
So I don't know, a little vague, but a little scary sounding.
Yeah, fear.
She did propose one other thing I could try. It's a procedure called an external cephalic version or an ECV. Have you heard of that?
Only because I had another gal on the podcast.
Okay.
Months ago, she had the ECV procedure.
Yeah.
But remind us what it is. Yeah.
So basically, the doctor places their hands on your belly externally and just tries to manually move the baby into that head down position. They have about a 50% success rate, and they like to schedule them for 37 weeks because there is a chance that the procedure can send you into labor or send the baby into distress, both of which would result in an emergency C-section. So for that reason, they like the baby to be full term, so like 37 weeks, but not full grown, because the bigger they get, the less room there is to make that turn. So 37 weeks is like that sweet spot. So here I am at 36 weeks. So I scheduled that appointment for 37 weeks. At this point, I just felt like that was my best chance at getting the baby in a head down position and therefore having a vaginal birth. So I went ahead and scheduled that. And then leaving that appointment, my husband turned to me and said, he was like, I just want to make sure we're on the same page that we're not going to attempt a vaginal breech birth if it comes to that. And I just looked at him and I was like, I'm not there yet.
Interesting. It's interesting that he had thoughts about that.
Well, I think she kind of scared us in that appointment.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, if it were me, because I was so just clueless and almost like low-key desperate, my anxiety symptoms already started around that 36, 37 week where I was like, whatever will, and you trust these providers too, of like, whatever will give me a healthy baby. But in that, you really do sacrifice like yourself, like trauma, like because C-section is major surgery and can be very traumatic for a lot of women. I've heard that a lot of providers push for C-sections because it's easier for them to control their schedules. And because with a vaginal birth, it can go for as long as it goes and it messes up their schedule. So selfishly, they like to encourage C-sections because it helps dictate the schedule. But then also because when they are trained for birth, a lot of them are trained C-section first. So a lot of them become really, really good. That. Yeah. A lot of them become really good in the operating room.
Well, there's no unknowns. Well, probably less unknowns in a C-section. Yeah.
Right.
They
so
can be better prepared.
Yeah. So I feel like it's very easy for them to scare new moms into just being like, hands up. Okay. Whatever you say goes.
Yeah. I even asked, I was like, could we at least wait until I go into labor and then do the C-section? Like, I just wanted my baby to like tell us when she was ready to come out. I didn't like the idea of like going and getting her early. The answer was, of course, no. Like, we'd rather be prepared for a surgery, which I get. But so, yeah, it was like, I just felt like I was left with no options is how I felt. And I felt like trapped. It was like, there's a baby in me and we have to get it out. And they're telling me that this is the only way. In the meantime, so that week leading up to the ECV that I was going to try, there are a number of things that you can do to encourage your baby to turn naturally.
Give them to us. Give them to us. Let's hear it.
I tried all of those things. You're going to love this. I saw multiple chiropractors. I received acupuncture treatments. I also met with a Spinning Babies certified person. So Spinning Babies is a like protocol created by a midwife, I believe, but it's basically a series of exercises and positions that you can do like at the end of your pregnancy to encourage the baby to get in the optimal head down position. They would even recommend that every pregnant woman do these positions and exercises, even if you're not breached, but if you're breech, they have what's called like a 6-day bums up protocol. So I did that. And it's just like a lot of inversions. I spent a lot of time nearly upside down, like on an ironing board, leaned up against my couch, just trying to get her like out of my pelvis and doing that front flip that she needed to do.
So all of your CrossFit stuff came into practice here because you were inverting yourself and lifting. Like, were you just like, yeah, I've been training for this for years. I didn't even know it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I met with someone who was certified in that. She like massaged me, showed me how to do the inversions properly. Everyone I met with, the whole goal was to like create space for the baby. Like if there's any misalignments, like any unevenness about my body, like to fix that and create space. So that was the whole idea. I also tried something called moxibustion, which is a form of Chinese medicine in which you take a piece of mugwort root and you roll it up like a cigar. You light the end of it and you hover it over the corner of your pinky toe for 10 minutes.
Interesting.
For each toe. For 10 days straight. And it's supposed to, this mugwort root is supposed to like facilitate movement in your body. It's used for other things too, like digestion and whatnot. And when you're really pregnant and have a big belly, you can't reach your toes. So my husband did this for me for 10 days straight.
Bless.
And spoiler alert, it did not work.
Oh, no.
But yeah, so I really left no stone unturned when it came to trying to get this baby to turn. I also stopped working out, actually, because I was scared that I was going to like do a squat and lodge this baby further into my pelvis. So I was just like scared to move in the wrong way. Like I was just spending time upside down at this point. So it was kind of a rough last month of pregnancy. Just like worrying about what my birth was going to look like and doing everything I could to try to get it to look the way I was hoping it would be.
Yeah. By this point, so you're trying all of this stuff before your ECV.
Yeah, to hopefully avoid the ECV. But so right. I get to 37 weeks, baby still hasn't turned. So I go in for the ECV. They do give you a shot of something to relax your uterus, because at this point, you're 37 weeks, you are having mild contractions. So they give you this shot to help your uterus kind of chill for a second. And they also basically prep you for surgery. There's like a 0.5% chance that you go into labor. And in that event, they need to do a C-section. So it's a little scary. You're like, you have an IV in me that they didn't use. I'm in the Johnny or whatever it's called. Like I looked like I was going in for surgery, but I have a doctor on either side of me. And one of them places their hands up by her head and one down by her bum. And they just, on the count of three, like applied pressure and pushed her, or tried to push her clockwise into like, so she would do like a forward roll and end up in that head down position.
And
the craziest part is like during this procedure, I'm trying to be a rag doll. Like in my mind, I'm like, be a rag doll. Don't use any muscles. Just be limp so they can do their work. And the moment they start pushing on your belly, your abdominal muscles just like seize up. No matter how hard I tried to communicate to my muscles not to do that, they were just like seizing, and that it hurts more. So I'm just like laying there while they're like roughly pushing on my body. They did tell me that the baby's heart rate could go down and that was okay as long as it came right back up. So they were monitoring her heart rate the whole time and it did go down. So they'd be like, heart rate's down. And then they'd take their hands off and then it would come right back up. But that was scary. Like I kept being like, is my baby okay? Like while I'm just laying there like a rag doll. So they gave it about three or four solid attempts before calling it quit, saying, all right, this baby's not moving. And then immediately after the procedure, they tried to get me to schedule the C-section for 39 weeks, because at this point, I'm 37 weeks. And I'm on the hospital bed like a defeated rag doll. And I'm just like, I'm not ready to do that yet. That procedure was a little more traumatic than I anticipated. I thought it was just like the fact that it's like external, it just seems really like, okay, like we're just applying pressure. But I just felt like, obviously my baby's in there in that position for a reason. And we just came along and pushed on her, causing her heart rate to dip when she clearly didn't want to move. So I don't know. I just felt like we totally disrupted her peace.
Yeah, that's tough. So did it hurt or did it feel more uncomfortable?
Just like uncomfortable. Yeah. It's like your muscles are flexing even though you don't want them to, and they're just pushing on them.
Yeah. I'm touching my belly right now because I'm trying to remember like what it felt like. I just remember it did feel like, I just remember honestly, like 36, 37, that's when I was getting very impatient. I feel like I was pretty chill throughout most of my pregnancy. Yeah. But then 35, 36 weeks is when I was like, all right, this is getting to be uncomfortable. So I can only imagine people pushing.
Yeah, you're like a balloon at that point, ready to pop. Like that expression is real. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then ECV didn't work. They were pushing you to schedule the C-section. Did you end up scheduling it?
No, I never did. So
defiance.
I was just like, I'm going to put this off until they
good
make
for
me.
You. Good for you.
I mean, at that point, I was like, well, if I have it, maybe I'll go over, like, maybe they'll let me do it at 41 weeks so that there's a chance I go into labor. Like, I don't know. Or like, I just wanted to give the baby more time to make that turn. You hear of these stories of babies like turning into the head down position, like right before. So I just wanted to give my baby time. But at this point, I'm starting to face the fact that my baby might not turn. So I started like aggressively educating myself on vaginal breech birth. So is it possible? Is it risky? And how do we do it? So what I found was that breech births are entirely possible. The problem is that most doctors are no longer trained in how to do them. So in 2001, there was this study that came out. It was called the Term Breech Trial. And the study basically concluded that vaginal breech births are riskier than regular head down births. Other studies came out later contradicting these findings and, pointing out that the study actually was faulty, but the damage had already been done. Like residencies no longer taught breech birth, and sectioning women at 39 weeks just kind of became the status quo.
Wow.
So vaginal breech births are essentially a dying art, and the providers who support them are like a dying breed.
That's actually kind of shocking. And your brain can't help but feel like, okay, this just helps hospitals push C-sections because they also, I mean, a hospital is a for-profit business, right? They make more money doing C-sections because it's major surgery and there's so much more involved. It kind of makes you feel icky in that it's just another excuse for them to not disrupt schedules, to churn out patients faster, because with the C-sections, you're in and out. Ooh, I feel icky hearing that.
So I also learned that vaginal breech births are nuanced. So there are like certain maneuvers and risk factors that a provider should be trained in. So like you wouldn't want to try a vaginal breech birth with a doctor who isn't trained in it. And in that trial, like there were untrained providers performing the vaginal breech birth. So of course there were less than desired outcomes in that study. We don't need to get in those weeds, but at this point, I just realized if I wanted to attempt a vaginal breech birth, I needed to find a provider who is experienced in it. So through my efforts in trying to turn the baby, I sort of like launched myself into this breech community that I didn't know existed. So all of
Cool.
those body workers that I met with, like the chiro, the acupuncturists, many of them sort of became my therapist. I like cried in all of their offices. But they've met with many women in the same position as me. So a lot of them kept mentioning this one doctor who is known to support vaginal breech births in the Boston area. Her name is Dr. Hardiman. They also told me she's really popular and really hard to get in with. So I called her
Oh.
office. I know. So I was like, oh, she won't see me. I'm 38 weeks pregnant almost. Like, there's no way. But I called her office and she told me she would see me as long as I got my medical records transferred. So I don't know if you've ever tried to do that,
Miserable.
but it is not easy.
Yes.
So took a few days, but got them transferred. I got an appointment with Hardiman. I'm in with her at 38 weeks. So in that appointment, she spent 90 minutes with my husband and I just explaining her approach to a breech birth. She walked us through, like, if this happens, I would do this. And if this were to happen, this is what I would do. And she just like thoroughly explained all the nuances of attempting a breech birth. And she just made us feel like at no point were we in trouble. So some of the nuances, and she actually performed an ultrasound on me and like checked to make sure my baby was in a good spot or in a good position to actually deliver her vaginally. So some things they look for, they want to make sure they're bum first rather than feet first. So with a head down baby, the head is acting like a cork and kind of not letting anything else out, like the cord, for example. So they
Oh,
don't
I
want cord
see.
prolapse to happen, but a baby's bum can also act as a cord. So if their bum is like wedged into your pelvis, which my baby's was, that's a good thing. So that was like, we checked that box. She wanted to check like where the cord was and it wasn't like hanging out near my cervix or anything. So checked that box. She checked to make sure her head was flexed, like her chin tucked. One of the fears of a breech baby is that their head will get stuck on the way out because it's like arched back. So if for some reason she saw that it was like arched in the ultrasound, she would have said that was a risk. But it wasn't. It was like her chin was stuck. So she was doing all the right things.
Little athlete, even in the womb.
In her little pike position.
Yeah, like perfect. Chin tucked. Like I'm just picturing her. Okay,
I
continue.
know. I know. So funny. And then lastly, you do need to push the baby out fast. So
Oh.
with a head down baby, like their head comes out and they can start breathing right away. And it doesn't so much matter how long it takes to get the rest of them out. I mean, everyone wants to push them out fast, but with a breech baby, as soon as you push like part of their body out, the cord becomes pinched, and that's their oxygen supply until the head is out. So once you get like part of their body out, you need to get the head out fast because their oxygen supply is like getting cut off. Yeah. So when I learned that part, that just sort of made my decision to go unmedicated a little more black and white. I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I need to be an effective pusher. I need to feel everything. I need to get her out. So that was, that kind of, again, clarified my choice to do it that way.
Your choice to go unmedicated.
Correct. Yes. Okay. If I was going to attempt a vaginal breech birth.
Okay. One comment is what, like, night and day, this appointment versus your first appointment with the other doctor.
Gosh.
Like,
yes.
The fact that she took 90 minutes.
I know.
To really hear you out and get to know you as a couple and as a future mom.
Yeah.
That's the sign of a great doctor.
Oh, yeah. She even, like, this sounds funny, but she, like, would place her hands on my knees when she talked to me.
Oh.
And I just felt like she was, like, a care provider. Like, she was giving me care. Yes. Night and day, this woman is, like, my hero. But, yeah, I was instantly so impressed with her. And, yeah, night and day.
Okay. So I'm on the edge of my seat. Okay.
Know,
I'm so, here. I'm ready for the next episode. Okay.
She also made it clear that the stars really have to be aligned for a vaginal breech birth to be successful. So like I said, Natalie so far was like checking all these boxes, but like there are so many things that can take place and not work out. And she made that really clear. There was still a pretty high chance that I would have a C-section, but I was just happy that I knew like she'd be performing it and that I did everything I could to try to give Natalie the most natural birth that she could have. So I felt so much better in her care. So at 38 weeks pregnant, I switched to a new doctor and a new hospital where I'd be delivering my baby. So if you know me, I'm like, I like to go with the flow. I don't like to ruffle feathers. And I like to keep things easy almost to a fault. There's probably many occasions in my life where I could have spoken up more. So this was really out of character for me, but I just felt like in my bones that it was like important for me to follow my baby's lead and honor her natural birth process.
It's wild when you become a mom, how you change. Cause I was very much the same way. Like I don't like to ruffle feathers. Low-key people pleaser, but yep. Man, when it comes to my kid, like I will ruffle every feather there is.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. You find out what you're capable of.
Yeah.
So funny thing is, I almost forgot this part of the story, but based on Natalie's position and the fact that I had like a healthy amount of amniotic fluid still, Dr. Hardiman felt like she could actually turn the baby with an ECV. And she was like, I just want to try this. It's totally your call. She let me know. She's like, she assured me that she has a much gentler approach. She was like, I believe it's about finesse, not force. And I just like trusted this woman at this point. And I was certainly hesitant because I didn't love my first experience, but that word finesse, I was like, okay, I think she's going to be, this will be better. And it certainly was. It was so different. I went in, same thing, like they prepped me for surgery, but her heart rate never dipped. She was much gentler. And I just felt like if this baby was going to turn, this doctor would be the one to do it. So I actually left this, it didn't work. She was not budging, but I left this appointment. I was glad we tried it. Now I really knew like we'd done everything we could. Natalie was in this position for a reason and time to move forward with attempting a vaginal breech birth. Now it was a matter of just waiting to go into labor. Another nuance to a breech baby is this doctor was not going to induce a breech baby. That's just her policy. Reason being, she needs the baby to indicate in some way that they are ready to come out vaginally. So if for some reason I failed to go into spontaneous labor, she would take this as a sign that perhaps the baby's not meant to come out vaginally and would do a C-section. And that made total sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had to go into labor. So I was just hoping that that happened. And it did. So 3 days before my due date, my water broke at 1 a.m. It was not like the movies. It was not a gush. I kept like going to the bathroom over and over. And I was like, gosh, I'm just so pregnant. I can't even hold it. And then I started having contractions. And I was like, oh my God, this is my water breaking. So I didn't wake my husband. I was timing my contractions. They were pretty sporadic and I knew I probably had time. I knew we had a couple of long days ahead of us. So I figured one of us should get some rest. So he wakes up at 5 a.m. to go to the gym. I'm like, welcome to the party. My water broke. I've been having contractions all night.
He's you're like by the way. Yeah. You're like, good morning. By the way. Yeah,
exactly. I was like staring at him like wide-eyed, just like going through contractions by myself. He's like, what? He didn't believe me. So it was funny. I happened to have my 40-week appointment that day. So we wow. just kind of packed our hospital bags and went to that appointment, knowing we probably wouldn't be leaving without a baby. So I arrive at the appointment. Dr. Hardiman checks me. I'm 1 centimeter dilated, ooh, which is okay. crazy after a whole night of contractions.
Yeah.
I technically wasn't in active labor yet. So she puts us up in a postpartum room. It was kind of just like hanging out in a hotel room. She told me she'd check in with me in the morning. And she did say, like, if you haven't made much progress by then, we'll have to have a conversation. So I'm like, okay, please dilate, please make progress.
Are you a new mom or soon to be mom, finding yourself on Google to learn about all the unknowns and new experiences such as breastfeeding, teething, and more? If so, then Mama Wears Athleisure is the podcast for you. Episodes are designed to be short with experts to give you a starting point to go off of. Download Mama Wears Athleisure and watch for new episodes every Wednesday. Follow Mama Wears Athleisure wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Because this is all unmedicated, like no Pitocin, mm-hmm. no drugs, like just literally letting your cervix dilate naturally.
Right. I knew that she would not augment my labor in any way. So I needed to like naturally progress. So we had a great night. We ordered some Cuban food from down the street. We watched a movie. Mind you, I was having contractions the whole time. So I didn't like sleep or anything, but they were manageable at this point. The doctor comes in the next morning around 11 a.m. to check me. And one thing I didn't realize is a lot of providers don't like to see you go more than 24 hours with ruptured membranes or your water breaking.
Oh.
So yeah, I didn't know that. Your water or your membranes is like the barrier between baby and earth side. So once those are broken, there's like a risk for infection, risk that the mother can spike a fever. So they sort of put this 24-hour time cap on you. So at this point, 11 a.m. the next day, I'm going on 34 hours already, since my water broke. So she checks me, I'm 4 centimeters, and she views this as good progress, thank goodness. So I think at this point, she just wasn't going to get in my way yet.
Hold on, I'm going to pause you. So at 34 hours, how was your mental state? Were you still like, I got this? Or were you like, oh my gosh, like what was your thought process?
The contractions were still manageable at this point. I mean, the hardest part was that I had no sleep and I was starting mm-hmm. to get worried about that. I had an appetite until the afternoon of this day. So this is Thursday. Yeah. I was just more worried like, okay, I haven't slept in 34 hours. Like how am I going to push a baby out and how much longer do I have to go? But my mental was still good. I was like doing a good job getting through them.
Okay, good. All right, let's continue.
Yeah, so they did start picking up at this point. She tells me I'm in active labor and finally transfers me to labor and delivery. I have a nurse. Everything's good. So then at 7 p.m. Thursday night, yeah, I started having contractions Wednesday morning at 1 a.m. So now we're at Thursday night at 7 p.m. She checks me and I'm 8 centimeters dilated.
Almost baby time.
Yeah. So I'm like, great. I'm almost there. But the funny thing is I still had like 6 more hours to go. But because, you know, dilating is just not linear. It's crazy. But so I also heard rumblings among the staff and I realized that I was like the high risk case. Like I was the lady with the breached baby and the ruptured membranes trying to have a vaginal birth. Like I know the department chair kept asking for status updates from my doctor. They were just like, get this baby out of this woman. And at one point I was like, what are they saying? And the nurse was like, nothing. You're doing great. Don't listen to them. Like she wanted me to just like stay in my zone, but I just could tell like, people were needing a status update.
You can always tell. They think we don't know, but we know.
Yep. So 7 p.m., I realized, I think Natalie was having a hard time like moving down into where she needed to be. So I think they call this part the transition, when you start to feel a lot of pressure and the head's like right there. That was not happening. And I'm assuming it's because she was like folded up and her squishy little body was like not easily moving down and not able to like pave the way like a head could. So she was not like coming down like she needed to. And the nurse kept asking, like, do you feel like you have to poop? I feel like they always ask women that. And I was like, no, I don't feel that way. The nurse and the doctor were suggesting that I do all these like hip opener positions during my contractions. So at this point, the contractions were very intense. Like I like to use the word intense, not painful, because I think it's like a mind game. But when all you want to do is like keel over during your contraction until it's over, I was having to like do lunges or like side lying release, like all these hip openers to try to encourage her to move down.
Ooh. So this, agree with you, intense versus painful. And actually, yeah. No, it's so weird. If I could go back, like I actually kind of look forward to the intensity of contractions again when I go through. Like it's so weird. It almost feels like pleasurable, like looking back. I don't know.
I've
it's so
weird.
You have? Okay, I'm not just a psychopath. Okay.
No. And I honestly, like looking back, and I'll get into this at the end, but like, I don't think of this experience as painful. Like intense is definitely a better word to describe it. So yeah, so I basically did 6 hours of hip openers during my most intense contractions. And that was the hardest part of this whole thing. And then I did reach my breaking point. So honestly, in my experience, like the hardest part of all of this and going unmedicated is the fact that you don't know how long you have to labor for. So
yes,
if someone were to tell me like, you have to do this for 12 hours, I'd be like, okay, here we go. But when you're on like hour 40, I just started to wonder, like, I don't know how much longer I have in me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going on 40 hours of continuous contractions with no sleep. And at this point, I never actually said the word epidural out loud because I knew I didn't want to go there. Mm-hmm. But I started saying things like, what are my options? I need help. I was literally thinking in my head, I'm like, do I just ask for a C-section at this point? Like, please take the baby out of me. Like, I was totally at my breaking point. And of course, when you start talking like this, the nurses tell you that means you're almost there. Like pushing is around the corner. So some things that definitely helped me get through that part was switching positions. Like my nurse was like, let's do 6 contractions in this position, and then we'll switch and do 6 more in this position. And that really helped to like have like benchmarks sort of in my labor. And then just breathing through contractions. So I was hooked up to something. So like Sunny and or my husband and the nurse could tell when I was having a contraction.
Cool.
So I played this game. I'm going to try to get through a contraction and have not let them know. Like,
oh, that's cute.
I didn't want to show signs that I was having contraction, because they were almost worse when you like let them take you over. Like when you visibly like let them consume you. So I was kind of like, I'm not going to let this one get me. And I would just like breathe through it. And if I did that, it was easier to get through and just like took less energy. Mm-hmm. So I did that for several contractions, and Sunny would be looking at the monitor. He's like, you're having a contraction. And I was like, I know.
You're like, you think?
I know I am. So yeah, those are kind of some ways that I got through. Finally at 12 a.m., I'm 9 and a half. The doctor comes in. She's like, you can push in 30 minutes. And this is the first time I saw that light at the end of the tunnel. I was like, hell yes, let's go. I had a complete mind shift. All of a sudden it was like game on. So finally, I think it's like a little after 1 a.m., it's time to push. And about 10 people flooded into the room. And the doctor told me that this might happen, but they had like all these specialists on standby just because she was in that breech position. So they had like neonatal specialists, resuscitation, pediatrician, I don't even know. But a crowd pours in.
You're like, fun.
The crazy part is I did not care. I was just like, come on in, let's go. Like, I also got more nurses like by my side just giving me coaching tips. It was like, It was a cool moment. So I'm ready to go. I get up on my hands and knees, sort of in an upright, like the bed was upright and I was leaning on the back of the bed position. And all of a sudden there's no contraction. And I'm like, leading up to this, like they were like, there was no breaks. Like they were back to back. And I'm like, I go, where's the contraction? And the nurse was like, oh, your body, this happens sometimes. Your body knows you're about to push and it's giving you a break. And I was just like, what? Oh my God, the female body is insane. Yeah. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah. Like, actually, that's so wild.
So I had a couple minutes to rest, and then the contraction came, and I'm sure, as is the case with everyone's first baby, I'm like learning how to push in this moment. So not much was happening with the first like 5 or 6 contractions. I kept seeing a little part of her come out, and then I'd take like a big breath and swoop her back in.
So you could see. You could see.
Oh, okay. So I ended up switching positions. Yeah. So I ended up on my back. Yeah. I ended up on my back with kind of in a crunch, like holding my own feet. Uh-huh. I think that this position also helped the doctor in the event that she needed to do like a maneuver, which she did. But this position actually worked for me, so I didn't mind. But yeah, so I was actually on my back, kind of crunched up. So my head was like tucked. And yeah, I could like see her, they call it rumping, not crowning, because her little bum was coming out.
Oh, cute. So did you had a mirror, I'm assuming.
No, I didn't. It's funny. I wish I did. That was
you could just actually see.
I just looked over. Yes.
Wild.
I know, but actually the doctor told me that she thought that kind of hindered my pushing, because I should have been leaning back a little more, but I was like looking at her.
Yeah.
Or trying to.
Fascinating.
She was like, you know, it's my fault. I should have whipped out a mirror. Not, she said that the next day. I was like, oh, well, maybe next time. So yeah, she's rumping. I literally see her little booty coming out, and then it was go time. Like once any part of her body was out, I knew that her cord was potentially getting like clamped or squished. And I had to get her head out ASAP. So I pushed her bum out, a leg popped out, another leg popped out really easily. Her body came, her arms were like up in the air, raising the roof, which is a little risky. Yeah, they prefer them to be like kind of over the chest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she was partying, so she did the doctor did have to do like a little maneuver to get the arm out in a way that didn't injure the shoulder, but she did. It was fine. And then it got serious. The doctor was like, you have one more contraction to get this head out. So I was like, okay, no breaks, push until the head's out. And
what was the alternative?
I mean, I think this doctor told me like she would use forceps if need be. Mm. But no, I mean, she's almost all the way out. It was just like, your baby needs to breathe type of deal. There was no other option. But I did, I pushed her out in that next contraction. The head actually came out pretty easily. Her chin was nicely tucked, like the little gymnast that she was in there. So I think I pushed for a total of maybe 15 to 20 minutes. And like I said, like, I don't have memory of pain during this part. I think you're just so focused and you have no choice in the matter. Like, the baby needs to come out and you have to push her out. So pain just isn't a factor at this point.
I love that. No, I asked because my doctor said the same thing to me, but it was a motivator because she was like, he needs to come out in the next push or I'm going to have to cut you. And I was like,
oh, okay.
An
episiotomy. Yeah.
Yeah. Where they cut your vagina open. And I remember thinking, I do not want that.
Don't want that.
I saw her turning to get to get the stuff, and now it like motivated me. I was like, who's coming out? And I just visualized.
That actually would have been probably what she would have done as well. She didn't say that, but yeah, it was like, head needs to come out.
See, that was probably nicer, but she's like, I'm gonna have to cut you. And I was like, oh yeah.
Well, it clearly worked for you.
It worked, but I similarly don't remember pain. I just actually remember like it felt, I don't know, like when I look back, I really do feel like it's like a goddess experience. Like that's what I like to tell new moms is like,
totally.
Don't be scared of labor at all. Like it's such a cool experience. So you had a successful breached birth.
Successful vaginal breech birth. I was like elated in this moment. I mean, I was meeting my baby, but I also got to do it in the way that I pushed so hard to do it.
Wow. And because you did it unmedicated and without a C-section, like you were just up and moving faster.
Yes. Yeah. And I'd say like this C-section was hovering over my head from 36 weeks on. And my husband will say, like, I was fairly certain you were having a C-section up until they told you it was time to push. Like, even they were taking my temperature every hour on the hour, because my water had broke and there was like risk for fever and infection. Like, there was just so many things I felt like working against me, but we just plowed on through.
She is a little fighter, little yeah. Natalie. Little oh my Natalie gosh. So then first. She came out, and then were you able to do skin to skin right away?
So not right away. Of course, I wanted to do that. That was like, you know, in my birth plan, wanted delayed cord clamping, all the things. The doctor was like, she's going to go see our friends. And she did have to cut the cord. I learned later, the doctor said she was impressively pale. So yeah, I think she might have struggled in that last window. I mean, I pushed her out fast, but yeah, she needed some help to get going. So they give babies an Apgar score. Are you familiar with that? I can't speak to it well, but I think it basically judges like their vibrancy when they're born. It's based on like their color, like are they crying, all sorts of things. It's out of 10. So her Apgar score right away, they measure it at right at birth, I believe, and then 5 minutes after birth to make sure they've like improved. And hers was a 4 to begin with, which isn't great, but it's not like danger zone.
And it's out of 10.
Out of 10. And then at 5 minutes, she was an 8. So she bounced right back. But yeah, there was a team of probably 6 people. They looked like a well-oiled machine, just like working on her in the warmer. And for some reason, I was not panicking. I was like in pure ecstasy. And she wasn't wailing like you want your baby to wail, but I could hear her. Like she was making sounds. She was trying, like she was working hard. And my husband was also doing a fantastic job at putting on a brave face. He later will tell me that he was completely panicked.
Oh,
he was kind of like back and forth between the warmer and me. And I kept saying like, is my baby okay? Is my baby okay? And the nurse was like, she's just stunned, which is like the best way to put it. But yeah, I like wasn't panicked in that moment for some reason. I don't know if I knew she was going to be okay or if I was just delirious, but everything seemed good to me. And then yeah, about 5 minutes in, she was on my chest and she was great. And that
Sorry,
was
I'm
like
tearing up.
I know. It was the most blissful moment of my life.
Oh, it's so cool. You like really walked us through a whole journey. You know, what's interesting is I wonder if because there were so many people there and specialists, maybe you felt really taken care of and supported.
Maybe. Yeah.
So I Googled the Apgar score because I've never heard of this before. The Apgar score is based on a total score of 1 to 10. The higher the score, the better the baby is doing after birth. A score of 7, 8, or 9 is normal and is a sign that the newborn is in good health. And it goes on and on, but everyone listening might be worth Googling this Apgar score because now I'm looking at it and there's different diagrams and stuff. It's just interesting. Oh, Apgar stands for appearance, pulse, grimace, which is a reflex of irritability, activity, muscle tone, and then respiration.
Good to know. Yeah.
Look at you, girl. You are teaching.
Yeah, so I don't
things.
Know like what they do with that data, but like I know they do it for every baby at every hospital.
Isn't it wild how much we don't know?
I know.
I'm actually feeling irritated right now because I've been even doing this. I've been doing like a new mama's podcasting for like 2.5, maybe 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
First time hearing about this.
Yeah. I'm sure you could ask what Archie's was.
I want to know.
Yeah.
Yes. Like so wild. I had a different experience in that I went medicated, but I also, so I had gestational diabetes. Mm-hmm. I was induced at 39 weeks because I was considered high risk, but yep. I wonder how much of that is true. You know what I mean? You start to question things after your experience. You're like, well, was I really high risk or did they just... Because they said they didn't want the baby to get too big. But Archie was born at like 7.2 pounds, which was very, very normal. We could
perfect.
We could have gone another. We could have gone probably to 40 weeks. And it was being induced sucked. It was really painful. Like, I think you actually explained it best when you were saying you wanted something about Natalie being able to tell you when she's ready.
Yeah.
Instead of forcing her out, like
going in and getting the baby. Yeah,
going in and getting her. Yeah, like it's that's what I did that. Like I forced him out when he was probably still doing his thing in there.
Right. Yeah. I think our healthcare system is tough. I think a lot of medical decisions are made based on averages. So it's important to remember that your case is always going to be unique.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to get caught in the conveyor belt of our healthcare system. So in my case, it was you have a breech baby, you're going to have a C-section. But I just kept reviewing the facts that pertain to my case, like my health, my baby's health, her position, my instincts, and I knew what I was capable of. So I used all of those factors to make that decision for me. Right. Like every doctor I worked with was wonderful, even my first doctor, and well-intended, but like only you have the full picture. So you really do have to be your own advocate. And that could probably apply to your situation too. Like in the case of gestational diabetes, like the average baby, you know, gets this big and needs to come out at this time. But like, what about your individual case?
Exactly. Like had I asked to go one more week, would they have been able to give it to me?
Right.
Like, right. I just simply did not advocate for myself. I just said, and part of that was also because I was tired, in pain, and I was just ready.
Get the baby out.
I was like, cool. You want to get this baby out 1 week before? Sounds good to me. I am tired and fat and need this to come out. Yeah. You're not sleeping. So you're peeing so much. Yeah. But I love how you put that, the conveyor belt of the healthcare system. This gives, I feel like, so many moms so much hope too, that to assess their own situations if they're in this situation.
Yeah. And to like look at their full picture. Like your doctor's going to give you a part of it, but only you have the full picture. When I was preparing for birth, I listened to so many birth stories. I love birth stories. I listened to podcasts. I read them in books. And that's how I learned about birth. And when I found myself in the, you know, breech situation, I listened to all breech birth stories and it really helped me. So I'm just happy you had me on here to share this, because I just hope like this story finds someone who needs to hear it.
Yeah, it certainly will. Actually, one last question. You talked about delayed cord clamping, and I don't know what that is. Do you mind explaining?
Yeah. So I think most hospitals do it. Like you probably had it done at this point, but that wasn't always the case. But I hope I explained this right. They believe that the baby needs to get everything out of the cord before you clamp it. So if you clamp it too early, there's some like blood in there and oxygen that still should have gone into the baby. So if you can just delay when you cut the cord and kind of let the cord run out and, you know, put all that good stuff in the baby before cutting it.
I see. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Again, another thing I didn't know of. And then how was recovery? So you were, how was it post, like, okay, she came out, everything, when all the crazy died down, how were those first few hours and then coming home?
They were amazing. I hadn't slept and I didn't even want to sleep, which kind of bit me a few days later. I was like redlining a few days later, but I still had some adrenaline to work with at this point. I'll have to send you a picture. So because she was in a breech position for so long in my belly, her legs were like sticking in the air for a while.
That's so cute.
So all the nurses were laughing. They don't see breech births that often. I think there's like 3% of full term babies are breech. And of those babies, 90% are cesarean section. So just witnessing a vaginal breech birth is just like rare, even for the hospital staff, I think. So yeah, the nurses were cracking up because her legs were just sticking in the air. They like wouldn't calm down. And even I have a picture of her swaddled up in the bassinet the first night in the hospital, and her legs are up. Like she's, they took a couple days to like settle down. And then as far as recovery goes, I was impressed with how fast, like my, how you say this, like my body parts were healing. What was rough for me was I think my pubic bone separated a little bit while I was pushing, which happens a lot. It's very normal, my doctor said, but it hurts to heal. Like it's just sore. So like stairs, and like I couldn't do a lunge. I actually probably couldn't do a lunge still right now. Just like a bone soreness. But like my actual skin and everything that stretched and whatever, like I was so impressed with how fast that healed.
It's what, yeah, it's truly wild. Sometimes you're like, oh, did a baby, was there a baby there? Yeah. It's just like, so it's truly wild how the, our women bodies just go kind of back. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
They do say that breastfeeding helps. And I did have like contractions while breastfeeding in those first few weeks.
Ooh, fascinating.
Which happens. Like, they're not like the same as the contractions during labor, but like, you feel like a cramping. And it's kind of like your body, I think, bringing things back together, shrinking your uterus back to its normal size. But that certainly happened the first few weeks of breastfeeding. Which is also crazy.
Yeah, that is awesome. And how is Sunny doing with?
He's so good.
Yeah, with his like newborn. So how the dad adjusts to newborn life, because he's gone
he's
through newborn
a
life.
Dad.
Yeah, he's yeah. been through. Yeah. Oops. Sorry for listeners. Sunny has a daughter who, I swear to you, whenever every time you post a picture, I'm like, that's not her.
She's so old looking. I know. She's 13. And so mature and beautiful.
She's so beautiful.
I know.
She's so beautiful.
So yeah, Sunny's already been a girl dad. So we already knew he was a great dad. But yeah, everyone's like, did it come right back? And it definitely did. I was calling him the baby whisperer for a while. He was like better at getting her down to nap than I was. And yeah, he's great. He had like a full month off with me. That was a really yes. nice time. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. I love that. The trend of paternity mm-hmm. leave is taking force into more and more companies because yes. it's so important. Why the heck would we not have it? It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being my guest today and sharing all the good stuff.
Thank you for having me. I had fun.
And is your Instagram public? Like, where can everyone find you?
I'm at Jacka Milani. So it's JACKAMILANI.
Love it. And I will put it in the show notes. Anytime you want to come back on to talk anything motherhood, anything you feel passionate about.
Yeah. Having a baby with your sister. That was a whole part of the story we didn't even get to, but we were in labor together.
Yes, everyone. So Jackie has a sister. Before we started recording, we were talking about this. They got pregnant basically at the same time and yep. were in labor at the same time. It's just unplanned, by the way.
Like unplanned. So we were due a day apart. We had the babies a day apart. But the craziest part was like being in a state of ecstasy and bliss, like, you know, going back to my room with my baby, but not knowing if my sister had her baby yet because we were both in labor. So I was like, where's my phone? Has Molly had the baby yet? She didn't know what gender it was going to be. Like, there was so many unknowns. But for the last 12 hours of labor and birth, like you're not on your phone. So,
right.
That was another crazy component was like, does she have a cousin yet?
The same age, like could be twins. Wait, yeah. Did Molly give birth? So Jackie's sister, Molly, lives in Costa Rica.
Correct.
Yeah. Also, everybody, I never met Molly. I'm just a creepy stalker. And follow her on Instagram. Did Molly give birth in Costa Rica?
She did.
That's a podcast episode right there.
It totally is, actually. She planned a home birth and her labor was so stalled. She also had a long labor, longer than mine, that her midwife transferred her to a hospital in Costa Rica, where she ended up also having an unmedicated birth.
Oh, good. I mean, she was at least able to have an unmedicated. Yes. Wow.
I'd say she still got like the birth she wanted, just not in like the setting she had hoped for.
Yes. Okay. So then part two is you're going to ask Molly if she wants to come on and maybe we could do like a sister podcast.
That'd be so fun.
Cute would that be? I mean, I want to hear about what birth is like in Costa Rica because I had a mom on to talk about her births in Thailand as like a Western woman. Yeah. Yes. And it's just fascinating. Like, for example, actually in Thailand, apparently C-sections are very, very popular because a lot of Thai women don't want to feel the pain. We talked about it, like intensity mm-hmm. versus pain, but they don't want the pain. They want to be able to control that experience. And also because they want the child born on a lucky number. So they'll go to like a fortune teller. Yeah. That will determine like a lucky date for the baby. And C-sections just allow you to do that. So my friend, she's a Western woman from Europe. She's from Poland. People were like, why would you ever want to have a natural birth? Like, people were truly shocked. And it was actually hard mm-hmm. for her to find a doctor that would work with her to have a vaginal birth even. So it was just,
oh my gosh.
Is that crazy?
Crazy.
Yeah. So I want to hear Molly's experience in Costa Rica.
Yeah. I'd say that's worth an episode. It was great.
Yes. Okay, Jackie. Well, thank you so much. I'll let you get back to little Natalie. Natalie's super cute. Check out Jackie's Instagram. And also love your workouts. Love everything you do. You are an inspo.
Yep. Fitness and baby content. That's it.
I love it. I'm here for it.
It's my life.
I love it. Well, have a great day, Jackie. And thanks, everyone. Lena. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening. And I'll put everything in the show notes and catch us back next week for the next episode. Bye. Thanks for joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger, photographer, and podcaster by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. You can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Stay in touch by following us on Instagram at New Mamas Podcast and Lena Forrestal. Thanks again, and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye!